This is IPM.
Our listener Terry was, as you'd expect, listening to the radio, to this report.
It was a lovely day, remembers Carmine. We were on the boat and we woke up early, around 5.30 or 6 o'clock, and I heard something that sounded like screaming. We weren't sure what it was, probably seagulls, we thought. At that hour in the morning, it was unlikely to think that someone was screaming.
It was the summer of 2015, and Emma Jane Kirby was reporting from the Italian island of Lampedusa as the migrant crisis was unfolding. Emma Jane met an optician who told her what happened when he and his wife went sailing.
I've never seen so many people in the water. It made such an impact on us. The first thing we thought was, how on earth are we going to deal with this? There were so many of them, scores of them, too many of them.
368 migrants died that day, but the optician, his wife and their friends on board their boat managed to save 47 people.
Carmine still goes out to sea. After all, he says, I'm from Lampedusa, it's in my blood. Last year, three of the Eritrean migrants he rescued, and who are now living in Sweden, returned to the island, and he took them out on a boat to the site of the shipwreck so they could throw flowers and pray for their drowned compatriots.
Where does our listener Terry fit into all this? Well, he got in touch with Emma Jane.
About 6 or 7 months ago, I got a strange email from a man called Terence Quinn, who said that he'd been terribly moved by a report he'd heard on the radio, and that he would very much like to base his final degree show on the report. He wanted to do something on migration. He had all kinds of ideas, and he just wanted to know whether I'd be okay with that and whether he could, through those 6 or 7 months, just keep in contact and send a few details of what he was doing.
What he was doing is now done, so I went to go and have a look at the Camberwell School of Art in South London.
I tell you what, I do like having a nose around an art school. Through every door there's a bit of pottery, some woodwork, there's bits of fabrics, photos strung up everywhere. Is it quite nice doing what you do, being somewhere like this where you can just have a nose round different rooms and see what other people are up to?
Of course, that's what it's all about. We all learn from each other. I don't know whether you have ever contemplated it. You would if you were my age. But you look back and early on you make choices. You make choices in what you study. You make choices about jobs. And you kind of go, I'll head left. And that's what you do. Now, if you're lucky, as I was, because I set up a company in Australia, a software company in Australia, and sold it, so I was able to retire early. And I thought, well, what am I going to do next? Well, I think I'll turn right. So that's what I did. And I retrained as a garden designer, and I've designed some significant gardens. And I thought, okay, I'll go out on a high and do something else. So I signed up to make my hobby my new career as an artist.
Tell me about your course. Who is on it? What's the sort of spread of ages like?
There are almost 40 people.
40?
Yes. Most people have had some other experience. So they're in their kind of late 20s, early 30s. But I was quite delighted to find somebody older than me. He's actually 78. And he walked the length and breadth of Britain recording the exploits of Capability Brown.
Mm. So close to your heart, gardens.
Yeah, exactly. So my tutor said, well, why aren't you doing something to do with gardens? I said, I've done that.
As you walk into this art installation, Terry's final project for his course, the first thing you see is the sea, projected against the wall, across the floor. The sound of waves and gulls, the occasional scream fills the room. And floating amongst all of this are two sculpted busts. One of them, the head and shoulders of Teresa, the optician's wife, and the other of a migrant.
The people who have experienced this, Teresa is screaming, and you also see a look of despair but slight hope on the face of the refugee in the water. I've named him Leo after the actor who played him, but He represents all of the people that were in the sea.
But whereas Teresa is a very sharply defined sculpture of her head and shoulders, the young man, Leo, as you've named him, it's unsettlingly vague, the face, not in a kind of cartoonish sense, but in the fact that he looks injured. It could almost be that the face of a corpse.
Well, there's not a lot of definition. So the eyes, you can see the pits of the eyes and the cheekbones and the lips and the nose, but you can't really see any detail that would give you this person who's representing all of the refugees that were in the water at that time.
And where she's facing him, screaming out to him, it's almost as if his head is tilted up, trying to listen.
Yes, exactly.
A sea of thrashing limbs, smashing down on me.
People.
I kick and punch.
Once we've taken some of this in, Terry puts some headphones on me. He's recorded two actors dramatising the events which Emma-Jane Curry reported on.
Over here!
We can all do something to help. So that made me feel that I wanted to tell this story. So I researched it, and I was able to make contact with Emma-Jane, and she was sort of delighted to give this subject a bit more of an airing, and it deserves it.
What was it about Emma-Jane's reports for PM? Was there a moment, was there a part of it that really set your interest on fire?
I've now listened to it many, many times, and it has the same impact each time. She approaches it in a very sympathetic way. It's not emotive, but you hear the words of the optician, of Lampedusa, and his story, and I'm beginning to crack up now talking about it, so I apologise for that.
It's all right.
But basically, that gave me the kind of emotional response that I felt I wanted to kind of bring out in my art.
Had you had that before in anything else that you'd read or seen on the topic?
No, because I'd seen it in the same way that everybody else does. You see it on the news, and okay, you're interested, but it doesn't engage you in the same way. The story engages you to a point, and then, okay, half an hour later, then you're watching something else, which has got nothing to do with that, and you've forgotten it. You might have remembered what somebody said, but you don't remember how it made you feel with the piece of art that I've produced. You may not remember what was said, but you do remember how it made you feel.
So many in the water still.
Reach up.
We'll never save them all.
For the next layer of this, as Terry calls it, I have to put on a headset, sort of high-tech goggles.
Tell me when it's comfortable.
Through it, I can see what I could see before in front of me, but instead now transposed over the real world are more of these busts of migrant faces, 10 times the size.
I cover him as the men drag more bodies onto the deck.
It does very much draw you in personally, and you engage with it, and you can feel the feelings of the people involved. And that very much changes attitudes, which is what I'm seeking to do.
Our listener, Terry Quinn. His installation, as he said, based on a report by Emma-Jane Kirby on PM. What did she make of it?
When I walked into that room, I pretty much burst into tears, actually, because he'd got it. He'd just got it. He'd got exactly what the optician hoped people would get from hearing his story. You remember from that original report, the optician was a very reluctant interviewee. He did not want to tell his story. He said, how can people understand what happened? How can they understand? How can they possibly? They were not in that boat. But Terence felt he was very much in that boat. He could feel himself. What would he have done in that situation? And I think that's what listeners felt listening to that original report. You know, it could have been any of us in that boat. What would we have done? And Terry really understood, I think, what the optician wanted to convey, that this migration crisis, you can keep it in your peripheral vision. You can say, oh, yes, we've heard all about those boats turning over and people drowning, but it's not our problem. That's what the optician thought until one day he was out at sea and it was just his problem because it was only him on the water.
You said that Terence just got it when you walked in. What was it that you saw or heard that he did that just that clicked?
The two busts that he's done, the optician's wife is screwed up in anguish, absolute anguish. And the optician's wife won't mind me saying, Teresa won't mind me saying, she did have a breakdown after what she saw. And I've built up a relationship with the optician and his wife over the last couple of years. And she's talked to me about, you know, how she feels. And even now, she's still very, very emotional about it, as is he. And he'd absolutely nailed that sense of horror that she felt. And on the bust of the migrant that he's done, I found it incredibly upsetting. It's less developed than the other bust of the optician's wife. And unfortunately, I have seen the bodies of those, the photographs of the bodies of those that the optician didn't save. And it looks like that bust, you know, a face that has been washed away partly by water, by being in the water. And that was a real emotional shock. It was like seeing those photographs again.
Is part of you interested about the places that art can touch with stories like this that journalism sometimes just can't?
Oh, absolutely. I think you know what Terry's has done so well is just illustrate this crisis in such a different way, because we've all seen those pictures of the overloaded boats, and unfortunately compassion fatigue sets in. It's an image that we've seen. This is why we did that original report and turned things on its head by, instead of interviewing migrants, we wanted to refocus listeners' attention back on the crisis, and we needed to find a different way to do it. So we interviewed ordinary Italians affected by the crisis. That's what you've got to do. You've got to find a new way of cutting through compassion fatigue, making people wake up, look. And that's, you can't ignore Terry's work. You know, it is a whole new way of looking, literally looking at the crisis. And he has basically, with those holograms, when you look through the special glasses, you can't keep that story in your peripheral vision anymore. You can't say, well, it doesn't matter to me. You know, those migrants, I'll push them to the back of my mind, because Terence has forced them into your vision so that everywhere, whatever you're looking at, whether you're looking at the sea or the bus, there is still this hologram that comes into view, or three or four at once. It's incredible.
And just finally, I don't want to dwell necessarily on what your emotional response was, but I'm just interested in whether you were moved to tears because he got it so right, or because you were back there and it was incredibly upsetting.
I can't lie. I was haunted by the optician's story. And I think that's, I'm even getting emotional saying it, I think that's one of the reasons he didn't want to tell me his story. He said, you'll be haunted by it. And I was. And I have been for all this time. But I think that's right. You know, it is a truly dreadful story. And I watched him and his wife suffer as they talked about it. And yes, it did absolutely take me back there. And when I saw that bust, you know, it took me straight back to that pathology lab in Milan, where I was handed a big photograph of books, album of photographs, which were the faces of the drowned, the 368 victims that the optician and his wife could not save.
Emma Jane Kirby.
All our stories start with our listeners. ipm@bbc.co.uk is our email, or you can tweet us at @bbcipm. I'm told you made great meatballs last night, is that correct?
Yeah, not just meatballs. I made a big sticky toffee pudding. I made a Greek salad. It was a bit like it was a work thing, just some people from work for dinner.
Yeah. Did you check whether I was available, or did you know I wasn't available? Is that why you didn't ask?
That's it, yes. That's okay. What it was.
Which of those dishes was the most ambitious for you?
None of it, really. I kind of shipped off all the tricky stuff to producer Emma, who did some of the cooking as well.
What did you cook?
Falafel.
Hummus. Beetroot, hummus.
Normal hummus.
It was a Greek feast.
Right.
The tricky part of the whole thing, though, was having a big group of people round to your house who haven't been round to your house before.
wouldn't really
have. So this was a sort of bonding thing for work people.
It's kind of a bonding thing just for all the work people.
When you say all the work people?
No, it was like five or six people. It's
just the really nice people.
Just the really nice people. Yeah. But you beforehand, you start going around your house thinking...
Do I want them to see that?
Well, no, it's that, but you sort of start looking at it.
Will that stain come out?
You start looking at things thinking, what will people make of this? So I was sort of tidying up and you think, do I need to explain why there is sort of a little bust of Chairman Mao at the end of the bath? I don't want to.
Now you've raised the question. We need to know.
Why is there a little bust of Chairman Mao at the end of the bath?
Yes.
Because I went to China and there were lots of busts of Chairman Mao you could buy. So I did. And where else are you going to put it?
What else did you... Did you move anything? Did you move anything out of sight?
No, I didn't move anything. I didn't even tidy my room or close doors to other bedrooms.
But what were they doing in your room?
Because it was like a come dine with me vibe. So people just felt emboldened to have a nose around.
What words did people use when they saw your room?
Well, some of them said, I knew you'd have that kind of bedding, which threw me off. And and the other weird thing was that when people arrived, they said, is it, because I live with two friends, they said, is it just men who live here? Yeah, I can tell. What does that mean?
So you're not asking them back. And is the plan that you will now, this will be a kind of supper club?
Supper club is the exact phrase that was used. Yes, not a come dine with me thing where you have to vote, because that just gets a bit nasty and competitive. I think inclusive supper club.